Welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and my superhero nickname would be Flu Fighter because I'm very sick and would like to have the power to be not sick.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and this week my superhero name would be Healthy Boy because I'm feeling just great.
Wow, so happy for you.
My name is Bunny Ness, and my superhero name, I don't know, because there's a lot of like snot clouding my thinking process right now. So everything I thought of was like Snot Master, but that's really bad.
That's more of a super villain.
Right, yes. That's all I got.
And I'm Sari Riley, and my super villain nickname to go with Mari's is the Mucus.
Ooh. Wow. Snot Master and the Mucus. That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm the henchman.
And this Flu Fighter it. And Healthy Boy are here to defeat you.
Great. This week we are talking about Up, Up and Away. And Mari, what happened? What was this movie about?
I feel like this is going to be a shorter synopsis than normal. And it's not because I'm not feeling well. I think that it was just like a really simple plot. We're going to go with that. So in this, a 13-year-old not named Pete, which is what Sari guessed, but it is Scott, which is pretty close.
That's pretty close.
It is pretty close. 13-year-old Scott Marshall comes from a family of superheroes, but unfortunately, Scott doesn't have any powers. If his powers don't show up before he turns 14, then he's just going to be normal for life. His parents have planned this big party to celebrate him becoming a superhero, so he's really, like, he feels bad about letting them down and embarrassing them in front of everybody, so he starts faking that he's getting his superpowers, but that puts him into some sticky situations, and also I had to stop the movie and walk away while he was lying about it because, again,
yes, it was so stressful. It was so stressful watching him lie.
I think he was really bad at lying about it. And then I think his parents just really wanted to believe him. So I was like, oh, no, too much stress, too many feelings. Meanwhile, an activist group known as Earth Protectors, they've developed this software that is basically like a mind control software. The programmer, her name is Nina, and she actually, like, she wants to hijack people's brains, but for a good reason. I guess, like, she wants them to recycle and compost, but her partner Malcolm is like, well, if we're gonna hijack people's brain, might as well get money. And so he wants to get money, rob banks and things like that.
The way that you just described the villain motivation is a little too close to your description of how you wanted to be invisible so you could rob banks. Like, you understand him a little too well.
I mean, yeah, sure. Like, I mean, I don't think that you should write a program to hack into people's brains to get money, but if, like, that program is there, I can kind of see why he's like, why would we use this for making people like tofu? Why don't we just use it to get money? While Malcolm is trying to rob the bank, he's stopped by Scott's parents, and they are Bronze Eagle and Warrior Woman, and that kind of puts him onto the trail that something is fishy is going on, because the people working in the bank said that they were basically hypnotized. At Scott's school, Earth Protectors is kind of, I don't know, testing their brain hijacking program by giving these CDs to all of the students in Scott's class, and basically it's pitched as their homework. So every night they go home and they watch this CD, and it's basically brainwashing them, hypnotizing them to do different things. So at first it's just everybody wear blue shirts, but then it's like steal money from your parents and building from there. come back around to Scott's birthday. He hasn't told anybody that he actually is just normal. And while during the party, they get all of the heroes that are there get a call about a woman, a damsel in distress, a woman in a burning building. And so what happened was that Malcolm, knowing that the heroes were on his trail, basically put Nina in danger, blew up the building that she was in so that the superheroes would show up and then she could put a tracker on them. But turns out that everybody's like, send Scott because he's a new superhero and saving a woman from a burning building is totes easy. And so Scott decides not to tell the truth yet either. And so everybody's like, go fly there and save her. And he like bikes there. So that was cool. When he gets there, he tries to save the woman, but it doesn't quite work out because he doesn't have any powers and the building's on fire. He loses his mask in the process. And then at the very last minute, his dad comes in to save the day because his grandpa spilled the beans that Scott doesn't have any powers. Nina grabs the mask, and with it, Malcolm is able to track down who the boy, the little superhero boy, was, ties it to Scott, and then figures out all of the identities of the rest of the superheroes by using a super special hypnotizing program or whatever to kind of learn about who they are and what their weaknesses are. And their main weakness is aluminum foil, because something something molecules, it's like their kryptonite. And so Malcolm sets up this whole big trap. He calls all the superheroes. He has a huge aluminum foil cage and he traps, Warrior Woman and Bronze Eagle and the brother. I forget what his name is. Silver Charge. So he traps them all and then he is trying to super hypnotize him. I don't know. It takes like 3 minutes. It's like a whole countdown thing. Scott has figured out that Earth Protectors is behind this all. He sees Nina, which was the woman in the burning building, getting into an Earth Protector van. So he put the pieces of this all together and he realizes that his whole family has been called to Earth Protectors. So he knows that they are in danger. So Scott, with the help of his friends, runs over to Earth Protectors to use their regular powers and like tripping adults and using a soccer ball to kick over a computer, which immediately just explodes. It was very sensitive computer, in order to save his parents and his brother, save the day. And then the big like moral of the story is that you don't need powers in order to be a superhero. They grab all the bad guys, wipe their memories so they don't know who the superheroes are anymore. Nina, I think, just gets away with it. Like, she was like, I don't know, I was just trying to get people to compost. And they're like, that's fine. And then I think that's it. The end.
I want to make sure to point out that after we got through Sari's guests last week, if you ignore the balloon part of the guests at the beginning, once we told her about the superhero part of it, her guess was that they all can fly and he can't. It's probably just about this dumb kid figuring out he can save the day with his ordinary life. And his family gets trapped by a supervillain who uses some sort of anti-hero technology to trap them in a bubble. And then this boy has to use his human ingenuity to save his family.
That was really damn close.
Sari.
Sari. Sari.
I'm going to be honest with you. I completely forgot that that was her guess between editing that guess and watching this movie. I feel like Sari has actually probably had more closer guesses than we've given her credit for, but because of that cycle of like, I don't know, the episode is done and it's gone from my memory and then I watch the movie, like the last few movies haven't been familiar to me. So like when you're guessing, it's your guess is honestly as good as mine what this movie is going to be. So but that one, spot on.
Yeah. I was just chanting, Sari, Sari. But I probably should be going, mucus, mucus.
Oh, yeah. Please. Yeah. We've got to stay in character for this episode.
Don't give away her secret identity.
Okay. Well, Matt, what is this cast up to now?
Well, there's a lot of people in this movie, and some of them are quite famous. So we're going to try to get through this pretty quickly. I will start off with some of the sorry to offend, but less famous people in this movie. We have Benita Ha, who plays the teacher, who I don't want to judge the character here, but she seems like not a great teacher who is just handing out this mind control stuff willy-nilly.
Wild.
Is not questioning it at all. Mm-hmm. But she has small roles in a lot of things, but most recently has been in a few Hallmark Christmas movies like A Christmas Miracle and The Mistletoe Inn. She was also recently in 50 Shades Free, and she is one of the...
Oh, no.
Yeah. But she also plays a mom in the that new movie Good Boys, where it's about the boys swearing a lot. I mean, I haven't seen. I don't know if any of you have seen, but...
I know nothing about it.
Didn't even know it existed.
Mm-mm. Yeah. It's like, I think it's like a Seth Rogen wrote a movie for little boys so they could swear a lot, is what it seems like to me.
Great.
Yeah.
Not in my interests at all. Yeah, so that makes sense that I've not been marketed.
I want to get this one out of the way just because it's not, I don't know, it's weirdly interesting to me, but there's not a lot of new information. Kassan Butcher, who played Adam the brother / Silver Charger, I don't know what he's up to, couldn't find much, but I want to point out that he has a fantastic IMDb biography that he clearly wrote himself. I'm not going to read the whole thing here because it's like a book, but I do want to read a few lines from it for you just so you can kind of understand what he's up to. It says, every so often, a prodigy is born of immeasurable talent and potential. Kassan Butcher doesn't really fall into this category, but he's a nice guy nonetheless.
Wow,
yeah,
great.
His childhood was, well, uneventful, due in large part to his being an introvert. Most parents have trouble keeping tabs on their kids' whereabouts. They wonder and worry if their children are safe when they are not at home. Kassan's parents didn't have this problem. In fact, they used to beg him to leave the house.
Wow, I love him. I hope he's doing great.
Yeah.
I do too. He's probably in his house. That is good.
But yes, that's pretty much all the information I found out about him because I got very distracted by his fantastic IMDb bio, which I encourage you all to, you know, go check out the rest of it because it continues being that great throughout. Next up, we have Olivia Burnett, who played Nina in this. She's another one that looked familiar to me, but I couldn't figure out why. And I think it's because she plays the little girl in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, which is one of my favorite movies. But she apparently was also a big Disney Channel star early on in like the existence of the Disney Channel on a show called The Torkelsons and a spinoff called Almost Home, which I don't know much about, but they were apparently big deals.
Yeah, this is like ever so slightly before my Disney Channel time.
Yeah, that's how I felt. Like I would have been like 5 or 6 when those shows were on. Uh-huh. And I probably saw them at some point, but do not remember any of them. The Torkelsons sounds like a fake show to me that someone made up.
It's yes, that absolutely sounds like something that we would make up to throw Sari off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, the old Disney classic, the Torkelsons.
Yeah, everybody knows about the Torkelsons, Sari.
Guess what this is about?
Yeah. Yeah, Torkelson fever really swept the nation back in 93.
Yeah, us and all the Torques.
Us Torque heads over here.
Yeah.
More recently, she apparently played a recurring role of homeless woman on Sons of Anarchy, which... Again, something I haven't seen, so I can't say how, like, important of a role that was, but she was in, like, 6 or 7 episodes, so I don't know. Again, these people are in things I haven't seen, so I can't vouch for their roles in them. Next up, we've got Alex Datcher, who plays the mom, Judy, / warrior woman. She did a lot more before Up, Up, and Away than after it. She was in Passenger 57 and some episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, Martin, Sister, Sister. But since Up, Up, and Away has only been in a couple of things, so if she looks familiar to you, it might be from something you saw before Up, Up, and Away, not after. Because she's apparently, I think she plays the wife in Passenger 57, so she has a very big role in that. And again, Star Trek The Next Generation, not something I watched, but she is a beloved character from that, apparently, as well. So next, I've got the two friends in this film who I think, personally, fan favorites usually in these films are the friends because they're usually given the funniest lines. And Randy is kind of that in this. He's sometimes funny, but he's played by Chris Marquette. And this guy, I think, has more credits than anybody else on this list, which is wild because he's one of the younger people on the list.
Yeah.
But he's done so many things, which is why I think he looks recognizable because you've most likely just seen his face in a lot of random things, or also heard his voice because he does a lot of voiceover work. But he kind of just looks like that guy from that thing. But you might know his face because he's been in Freddy vs. Jason, Just Friends, Fanboys, The Girl Next Door, Alpha Dog, The Education of Charlie Banks, Weeds, or more recently, he's been in a few episodes of the Bill Hader show, Barry.
I feel bad because you keep naming things and they just so happen to be things that I have never seen before in my life.
He also, in the Disney Channel world, was on Even Stevens playing a evil Lewis Stevens.
Fantastic.
Yeah, which led me to find out that he was recently on Christy Carlson Romano's Throwback Kitchen show that
Throwback
she does on
Kitchen,
YouTube.
Yes!
Yay!
Yes.
So, yeah, if you're playing the Cooler Than Homework drinking game of when Throwback Kitchen is mentioned, take that shot. The other friend slash love interest in this film is Amy, played by Jamie Renee Smith, who young Matt definitely had a crush on. In the same year as Up, Up, and Away came out, she was also in MVP, Most Valuable Primate, which was one of those Air Bud spinoffs, but about a primate playing hockey. So, yeah, that's one of those movies you see on the, like, Blockbuster shelf and never rent. But she was also on shows like ER, Malcolm in the Middle, and Weeds in the same episode as Chris Marquette, who played Randy, and they play friends in Weeds as well in a few episodes, which...
So Weeds is a show that you named that I have seen, but I'm like, I have no recollection of either of these people ever being on this show.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't know when they were in it, because at one point I just stopped watching Weeds. I don't even remember when. I just know that at one point I wasn't watching it anymore and couldn't remember why. But they're in a few episodes. I looked it up. I saw some stills of them in the episode together, and none of it looked familiar to me, so I unfortunately can't help you out there with any context. But they are in a few episodes together, and they seem like they play friends, because in the stills I saw, they're standing near each other.
Great.
Now she is an acting coach and teacher, and according to her Instagram, still very crush-worthy, in my opinion. Oh, also weird connection between Jamie and Chris, besides their Weeds roles. They were both also on The Nanny when they were children, where Jamie played young Fran Fine, and Chris played young Maxwell Sheffield.
What?
So
yeah.
Weird.
That's so weird.
Very strange. So their careers have just been like interlocked since birth, pretty much. Getting into the more famous people slash stars of this film, we have Michael J. Pagan, who plays Scott, the kid slash warrior eagle. Since Up, Up, and Away, he hasn't done a ton of stuff, but he was in Gridiron Gang, The Rock's football movie, and a handful of other projects, including See No Evil 1 and 2, which are a series of horror films produced by the WWE. Yeah.
That you've watched?
No, unfortunately. Weirdly enough, I have not seen them. I remember when they came out, there was like this huge push on wrestling to be like, hey, we're making movies now, please go see them. But I don't think they're very good, and I'm not a big fan of horror films, so I don't know, I haven't seen them. But he's in both of them, so he must be a pretty big role. Mm-hmm. And he has an Instagram where he posts a lot of very attractive photos of himself. So good job, Michael J. Pagan. I'm just, you know, being attractive and taking lots of pictures of yourself in very nice outfits. Next up, we have Sherman Hemsley, who plays the grandpa slash Steel Condor, who is definitely the most famous cast member. I did want to check with Sari to see if you have recognized this man.
No, I didn't recognize anyone from this movie.
Sari.
I'm so sorry.
I shouldn't be surprised anymore when this happens, but
no.
Here I am, surprised yet again.
Yeah.
Me, Kiki Palmer gif. I ain't never seen this man. He was walking down the street.
Well, it is wild to me that of all the movies we've watched so far, like this one is one that you didn't recognize some people from, because there's a couple people that I feel like have been in enough things that just would have crossed your eyeballs at some point, especially Sherman Hemsley, because he was from the Jeffersons. He played George Jefferson, who he was on All in the Family, Dinosaurs, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And as a kid growing up in the late 80s, early 90s, it felt like he just guest starred on every TV show there
was.
He always just kind of played George Jefferson on things. Like, he played the same version of himself. But I think he was just one of those people who popped up everywhere.
Uh-huh.
Except for in all the things
except
Sari
for
was
in any, yes, yeah. anything that Sari watched.
Yes. The key difference is growing up late 80s, early 90s to growing up mid to late 90s.
Yeah.
Apparently. Yeah. I'm like trying to look at more pictures of him to see if I will no. He's no more familiar with the pictures of him in the peak of his career.
Yeah, I was going to say, he kind of also, like, not only played the same role, but looked very similar throughout his entire career. Like, he never played a role where he, like, disappeared like a chameleon into a role. So, if you don't recognize him on first glance, you don't know that man.
No.
He did, unfortunately, die in 2012, but as we just talked about, he had a very long and illustrious career, and, most people know him well. Next up, we have somebody who I thought Sari might also recognize. We have Kevin Connolly, who plays Malcolm, the bad guy in this film.
No.
No?
Right. No. Sorry to this man also.
Before Up, Up, and Away, people might have seen him in the Beverly Hillbillies movie or the show Unhappily Ever After. But after Up, Up, and Away, this man has been in John Q. He was in The Notebook. He was in Secretariat. He's in He's Just Not That Into You. And most famously, in Entourage, where he plays Eric slash E.
I watched almost all of Entourage for reasons I cannot explain to you, but
same.
I have seen basically all of that show. I never saw the like the last season or the movie, but otherwise
I saw the last season. I have not seen the movie.
That is definitely where I know that man is from, Entourage.
Yeah, I also remember in The Notebook he plays like Ryan Gosling's character's friend, I think, who's just kind of always around.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I used to also watch Unhappily Ever After and the Beverly Hillbillies movie as a child, so those things are also familiar. So I think this guy has just like existed in my brain forever, and the fact that he's like 45 now feels not real. Like, he just always sort of seems like that like 20 something guy in those movies. But now he's currently running a podcast network, Action Park Media. So Kevin, if you're looking for any new podcasts to give money to,
what's up, Kevin?
Big fans.
What Sari meant to say is that she totally recognizes Kevin.
Big fan.
Sari loves Entourage. So the last member of the cast that we have not yet talked about is Robert Townsend, who plays the dad, Jim, who is also Bronze Eagle and also directed this movie. But he's done just so many things. You might know him from his shows in the 90s. He had The Parenthood. He had BAPS. He had a bunch of other things. He's a huge part of the independent film movement in the 80s and 90s with movies like Hollywood Shuffle or his other superhero movie, The Meteor Man, which is one of the biggest box office bombs of all time, but I'm pretty sure I watched it when I was a kid and had fun. Most recently, though, he's actually playing a character in the CW's superhero show, Black Lightning. So this man and black superhero movies, boom, tied together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is the very large cast list of this movie.
Okay, so Up, Up, and Away. Nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this movie as a kid?
Yeah, but like maybe once or twice. It kind of rang a bell a couple times. I was like, oh, I remember that scene, but not as well as things like Smart House and Brink.
Mm-hmm.
I had like this weird thing where when I thought about this movie, I immediately thought of aluminum foil. and that was it. That's like the only memory that I carried over. And I was like, that's weird, that's stupid. And then within the first 5 minutes of the movie, I was like, oh, okay, so I did remember like a huge piece of this.
It was just completely decontextualized.
Yes.
I have no recollection of ever seeing this movie before.
And me neither.
So, did you like this movie? This was a first experience for two of the four of us.
So, did you like this movie, Nicole?
Oh, yeah. I never go first. I'm always asking the question. I did. I really liked this. I had a blast. Like, I don't know. I mean, it's not... I think that with these movies, because so many of them have such strong nostalgia ties, that, like, they are always going to kind of win out in my heart and in my feelings. But that being said, I thought that this was generally very charming. I like, I don't know, the gag of tinfoil being the thing that is their one weakness, I found kind of hilarious. One of the things that struck me while I was watching this too is that the sort of target age range for this movie is also kind of this moment where you're starting to have a really clear separation between fiction and, like, I don't know, your personal fantasies. And so, like, the idea of, you know, like, you're never going to get that Hogwarts letter. Like, that isn't actually going to happen for you. And I feel like this movie did a really, like, careful and gentle job of being like, it's going to be okay. Like, you're going to be a normal kid. And, like, that's going to be fine, too. And I don't know. I found this movie generally very charming.
As the other person who hasn't ever seen it, I agree. I really liked it for a lot of the same reasons. Like, it was just a very good family.
Mm-hmm.
I got the same feeling. I don't know. They were just, like, supportive of each other. And the parents make a misstep. But it's never, I don't know. They like, continually reaffirm that they love their son, and it's just nice to see a healthy, supportive family in a movie like this, not where, like, someone is missing or dead or mean.
And they understand that they made a misstep too. Like, they understand the way, like, I didn't feel like they still punished him for lying, but it felt like they understood the degree to which their wishes were part of why he felt the way that he did.
Yeah. And I felt like they straddled the line between this is still a family and they are superheroes together. So, like, when the parents were fighting off the bank robbers and also bickering about who got there first, that was very funny to me. Maybe because I'm now an old and if I watched this as a kid, that would not be funny at all. But as someone who was an adult, I was like, yep, that would happen. You would be fighting crime and bickering. And as far as, like, the mind control CDs go and the tinfoil affecting the molecules, because this was a superhero movie and, like, far enough away from reality where it was just like superpowers exist, I am willing to suspend my disbelief. Like, you're not passing this off as science. It's just like, okay, of course, there's this family that superpowers, it's sort of genetic, but sort of random. They can be weak to tinfoil because it's a funny bit. And I accept this.
There's an element of magic baked into the premise. So, like, anything that doesn't make sense is in universe explained away as magic.
Yeah.
I didn't like it as much as you two. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed parts of it a lot. And I think for me, part of it is that it took a long time to sort of get where it was going. And when you've only got like an hour and a half in a movie, I'm like, come on, let's get to the, you know, where the plots converge a little faster. So for me, like, the first hour of the movie felt like it should have been like the first 20 minutes of the movie. And then we should have kicked off from there. I felt like the first hour or so was a bit of a slog for me to get through. I didn't find the family as, like, connected and charming as you two did. I don't know. I didn't think they had great chemistry altogether. But I did really start to like it after the plots sort of converge, because I feel like at the beginning we have these, like, mind control people doing their thing, and we have this kid worried about, like, not having superpowers, and they're kind of just not crossing over that much. But when he steals the money and starts to lie about that, and it starts to be, like, clear that this is going to come together really soon, I felt like from the money stealing scene after that, I am on board with everything that happens. But the beginning was not my favorite.
I enjoyed it. I think that I can't quite figure out how to explain why this felt a little bit different to me than other DCOMs. There was kind of like an earnestness, I want to say, about, I don't know, all of these have messages, but this message was like front and center of, like, that what Nicole was saying, like, you're gonna be okay, doing the right thing is like the superhero part of everyone's life. Like, I don't know, that message felt stronger to me. So there was a little bit of like cheesiness as I was watching, but ultimately I just really loved the family. I think that it is always great to see supportive parents, and I you know, we make this joke often about like focusing in on the family and the parents when you're watching as an old, but yeah, they each you know, person, the kids and the parents made mistakes and they fixed it and they correct it. And the entire like idea of being the normal one or the everyman or whatnot, there's something about that that is like forever relatable. Mm-hmm. And I laughed. I didn't cry. There weren't like emotional moments, but definitely was entertained. And there, like I said, there were definitely moments that I was like, this is a little like cheesy, or it's like the humor is not quite there. His little friend did a lot of like physical humor and stuff and was like a little over the top where I was like, calm down, kid.
Yeah. Up until the very end, when the two, when Scott and the little girl were having their little flirty moment and he popped his head in the middle of them and was like, yo, can we like, you know, make sure that we get out of this situation, like this is cute and all. That was his one joke that I did actually laugh at. But I agree on everything else. But at that moment, I was like, yes, this is relatable. I'm with you.
But that feels ultimately like one of those things where you're like, aha, yes, I'm not a child and I am watching this. I probably would have found him funnier when I was a child, but as an adult, I wanted to tell him to calm down a few times. So things like that. But in general, I feel like this is in my top five so far. Like five, yeah, that feels right.
I'm envisioning you like moving it around as you say that. You're like, how does it feel here? How does it feel there? I put it at number four. So
I also put it at number four because the effects were comparable to Halloween Town for me, where I was like, that's goofy. but I think I enjoyed the story a little bit more, and there was still the charming younger sister. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the little sister was very good. Mm-hmm. I do want to say that I totally agree with the earnestness of this, because I think one thing that this has that a lot of DCOMs don't is that sort of idea of they are the outsider from their own family, whereas a lot of DCOMs that we've already seen and that we will continue to see do the thing of, oh, you're a mermaid just like your family, you're an outsider from the regular world but we accept you, or you're a witch just like your family, you're an outsider from the rest of the world but we accept you, be part of the witch thing. Whereas this is the opposite of, he wants to be more involved with his family, not like running away from his fate, essentially, which is a lot of the DCOM formula. So I think that works because, and that, I think that's why part of it feels different, is because we're not used to that. We are used to the kid rebelling and not wanting to be involved with his family. But yeah, I did enjoy parts of it a lot. I think there was just parts for me where I was like, oh, I kind of felt like that was going to happen and it didn't. And I feel like it could have been better if you had tweaked some things, just like small character moments that would have made the kid, I don't know, more likable to me. Like, there's the big one for me is that early on in the movie, we get the soccer game scene where it's shown that he's being really selfish and he won't pass the ball to Amy, who he likes, and he shoots and he misses. And I'm like, oh, like, okay, that's got to come back later. Obviously, there's no reason to focus on this scene if it doesn't. And so later on, when he's going to save his parents and they're in their big tinfoil prison and he's going to kick the soccer ball, I was so expecting him to have the moment of thought and go, oh, to successfully do this, I need to pass the ball to Amy because she is better than me and she will kick it and actually help save them. But that didn't happen. He just kicks the ball and saves them, and then Amy's just there, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's cool. But I kind of was like hoping he would have a character growth moment and not just like a physical feat moment in that.
I also partly expected him, like I kept expecting his powers to kick in, even though I knew that would like completely negate the message. I honestly, like in the last scene is them at like a soccer game. I was like, oh, he's going to like kick the soccer ball and it's going to be super hard. I don't know why. I just kept expecting that it would be like jokes. You do have powers after all. It didn't happen.
Well, I think the ending felt just like, I don't know. I think the ending felt weird. I'm not sure why. I don't know that I can even like clarify why it felt weird to me. But I think, yeah, like it either felt like he was going to suddenly have like a little power, or there was going to be a hint of a power that only we got to see, or there was going to be something more substantial in the sort of like acceptance of I'll never have powers. But it was just this weird random, like, you're co-captains of the soccer team, congrats, And that was the end of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like the way that they handled Amy asking him out to the dance and then left that unresolved where he... Yeah. Like she rode by on her bicycle and then he didn't make a move or anything. And yes, I guess I'm glad that they just ended up as co-captains with their unresolved crushes on each other, because that's an extremely 14-year-old thing to do. But also it just felt like that was not wrapped up in any meaningful way where they could have been like, oh, that is a moment of character growth where he, with the confidence of knowing that she likes him too, could do something bolder.
No, that story is that if that woman is not making a move, they're not going anywhere. That's what I learned from that. Uh-huh.
I did like the detail that they only eat like spinach and green foods and like really healthy things that like to keep up their superpowers. You gotta eat your spinach and your greens, kids. Eat your broccoli. I did think that was a fun little detail to add in there that was sort of like, I don't know. It was a weird twist where, again, because this world is weird within this movie, you don't really question it.
Mm-hmm. I think to that same end, like the idea that, you know, well, obviously his little sister had powers from pretty early on, but it like by 14, if you don't have them, you'll be normal. And then we see the grandpa and he's like slowing down, like his powers are like, I don't know, sputtering out. Uh-huh. So that idea that as you get older, your powers are just like as tired as you are. I love that.
Yeah, like when he bursts in at the end, it's very good because they've given you enough time to forget that he was supposed to be on his way, and they like solve all the problems. And as they're walking out of the building, he just bursts through the door. He's like, Steel Condor is here. And you're like, oh, yeah.
I also really liked the nods to other superheroes. The Steel Condor made me remember it because over the dinner party he was like, and then Clark Kent came along and decided to be Man of Steel, and now who am I, just a steel bird? And that was just so amusing to me, and probably something that I would have liked as a kid too. Mm-hmm. Because then they're like touchstones into other media, so it's like, oh, I've heard of Spider-Man, and that they're making fun of Spider-Man or something like that.
Yeah, they said they had Spider-Man and Mary Jane over for dinner, and I was like, oh, I like that. Yeah. You don't call him Peter Parker, which is a little weird, but you just say, oh yeah, Spider-Man, you know that guy? He came over for dinner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's like, this is the original biggest crossover event ever. Yeah. The start of the MCU was up and away.
I guess also I would just like to mention, part of my being like, touched by this movie and seeing like such a wholesome, lovely family was also that it's just like a family of black superheroes. Uh-huh. And it's like a 2000s movie. Uh-huh. And I just, there was something just so, and it's just so normal. They never call attention to the fact at all. It's just, this is the family that they're showing, you know, and it is loving and healthy, and they are all these great heroes, and they have all these strong morals, and it just is what it is. And it's so interesting to me too, because it's only like a few movies removed from Don't Look Under the Bed, and we were talking about how like they cast Larry, and like the Southern affiliates are gonna be real mad about that kiss or whatever, and just a few movies later we have like this whole family of black superheroes. So in, I guess we're still dealing with like diversity in superhero movies in the year 2019. So the fact that Disney was like, we got this in 2000, that was cool.
Yes. This week's group discussion topic. This is the first time that we're starting to see the effects in this project of like using a topic. Like once we've used a thing, it's gone forever. So we used up the idea of the superpowers that we wished that we had on You Lucky Dog of all things. Terrible.
What were we thinking?
What were we thinking? Regardless, this week we are talking about our favorite superhero stories because, you know, we've all lived through the last decade in media. We've all seen some superheroes. So what are some of your favorites?
I think, like, looking back at the last decade, like you said, there's been so many. Like, just Marvel has made, like, 22 movies or whatever in, like, the last decade. But my love of superhero movies started very early with Batman, the 1989 Batman, the Tim Burton directed, Michael Keaton starring, Jack Nicholson playing the Joker Batman, because that was, I mean, I was, like, 2 years old when that came out. But I was so super into it. I had like a Batman themed birthday party when I was two. I had all the toys. And then like growing up, it still continued to be like one of my favorite superhero movies. And it just has a weird like nostalgia thing for me where like I can look back at it and see like, oh yeah, parts of it aren't great. Some people don't like that era of Batman at all. But for me, that was what really started like my interest in superhero movies and kind of the one I compare any superhero movie now to, because I'm just like, well, would I rather watch the 89 Batman movie than watch Infinity War? Maybe.
My like in my heart, in my feelings sort of favorite is also older, and it's not a movie. It's the 90s cartoon X-Men. And when I think about my favorite superhero things, I like kind of revisiting this representation conversation. I have an older brother and a younger brother, and growing up, I like the media that my brothers were into kind of tended to like dominate the house a little bit. It was harder to watch things that were particularly feminine because you couldn't get all three of us on board, right? But X-Men was really cool and exciting because my brothers loved it because it was superheroes. And like, I felt like a participant. It was something that didn't feel like it was just for them. It felt like it was also for me because there were a bunch of girl superheroes. And like, Rogue was so cool. And Jubilee, that was like my vision of what a cool teenager would dress like is Jubilee. When I became a cool teenager, I would dress like Jubilee. And like, I don't know. I think about how much that like affected me and like the way in which that stuck with me more than all of the other things that I watched with my brothers. That was the thing that I was like, no, this is for me too, because, you know, there's Rogue and there's Storm and there's Jubilee. And like I go here too. And like how much that mattered to me. And then of the sort of actual superhero movies, Captain Marvel has its problems and I understand why that movie is not for everyone, but I don't know, this movie about this woman who's super powerful and she's gaslit out of believing that she is in charge of her power. Like something about that affected me like to my core. And so I like that one is, I don't think it's the best of the Marvel movies, but it is probably my favorite of the Marvel movies, just on a like strictly, I don't know, like I'm being pandered directly to with that movie and like I'm okay with it and I love it and I'm like happy to have that experience.
I've talked a number of times about my love of Superman, and that also started for me like super young. In 1993, I would have been 7, and that's when Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, started airing on TV. And I freaking love that show, and I was in love with Dean Cain real hardcore. So that's like, I think it was very formative too in that way, because watching, like having Superman be a favorite means, I don't know, I've always had that like love of very pure and good characters and like a very well-defined sense of justice for like wanting my heroes to be, you know, that kind of mold in Superman is. And also I really like flat arcs, and I think that the reason that Captain Marvel is also probably my favorite Marvel movie is that I love stories about figuring out what kind of hero you want to be versus ones about like, oh, am I good or am I evil or whatever. Like, no, we know Clark Kent is good. He's always been good. He's good as Clark. And then he's just kind of figuring out how he wants to be Superman and how that fits into his life. And it had a lot of that like same charm in terms of like, you see Clark's interpersonal relationships in the show. I don't know if it's any good. I've watched it post the 90s and it definitely has like the 90s saxophone of like soundtrack of just like cheesiness in the background and things like that. But I don't know, I really just enjoyed watching like Clark's personal story, and then also in every episode, you know, he has the Superman thing that's almost like incidental to him also being Clark Kent. So super big love for Superman, and it comes from a TV show.
I feel like my favorite superhero story is similar to Nicole's, not in that I had siblings who would dominate the media, but because it hit at the right time and it felt like it included me at the right age. Mm-hmm. So honorable mention to the Powerpuff Girls, because I watched a lot of that cartoon growing up, where it was like, yeah, here are these girls. I identified the most with Buttercup because I was very tomboy-esque growing up. But still, like, here are these sisters that are fighting crime together, but also in kindergarten.
I was such a basic child. It wasn't until I was like, I don't know, 10 or 11 that my identification with like a fictional character extended beyond we both have blonde hair. Like, that was my primary rule, was like, well, if we both have blonde hair, I guess I'm that one.
For me, it was I grew up with two sisters, and so siblings, like pairings of three siblings, is like really, it happens a lot in media. So anytime there were three siblings, which Powerpuff Girls was, we would immediately be like, okay, oldest, middle, youngest. Like, this is it. It is what it is.
We used to watch that TV show together. Who you are as a person doesn't matter.
Right.
Anyway, Sari, sorry.
No, that's okay. Fascinating. With three siblings, what you could do. I was just watching it by myself being like, wee, this is fun. Yeah. But and I've definitely talked about this before on the Snark Squad pod, but Teen Titans, the animated series that ran from 2003 to 2006, was probably one of my favorite shows, like TV shows, period, growing up. And it's just so great. I think it's adapted from a comic series, so this isn't like an original premise, but it's basically a found family led by Robin of Batman and Robin, along with an alien named Starfire, a demon named Raven, Beast Boy, who can just transform into different animals, and Cyborg, who was a football star who got into an accident and became part robot. And it's just like, they're so good. They're funny episodes. It's just a bunch of teenagers living in a tower together and fighting crime, which was like the dream as a teenager. Wow, that seems great. Like, live with your friends and eat pizza and save the world sometimes. And the show just does a really, really good job of focusing in on the relationships between them and how different friendships in the group play out, or how different people's insecurities drive them away from the group, but then they like find acceptance again, or figure out their shit and move through it. And I think it was a really important show to me in how like complicated but also wholesome friendships can be. And so, yes, highly recommend. And the theme song, super catchy. There's the English version and the Japanese version that they alternate throughout the series. Both very good.
On that topic, I have had the X-Men theme song stuck in my head since the moment you mentioned it, Nicole.
Yes.
Just that it's one of the best. It's one of the best theme songs of like any show ever. And I promise I've been paying attention this whole time, but I've also been like singing that song in my head the entire time we've been talking about other shows, because it's just so damn catchy.
Whatever. I'm going to play those 90s saxophones of Lois and Clark.
You all reminded me, though, of some other things that I want to mention real quick that were very formative for me as a young boy in the 90s, of superhero groups that were made up of friends. And there was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Obviously, the movies were great, but more formative for me was Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Because
As soon as Sari said Powerpuff Girls, my brain was like, oh, Power Rangers.
Yeah. Duh.
I was so like in on Power Rangers that if I was going to like miss an episode because it was on before I got back from school, my mom would record it on tape for me so that way I could watch it when I got home. And it's one of those shows now I go back and watch, and I can watch like an episode or two and be like, I am good for a few years. You can't like binge that show at all. But it definitely was one that I know too much about Power Rangers because I watched it so much as a kid.
We watched it while it was airing, but we also had, I guess it's the first like season on VHS tape. It's like everything like up to when Tommy joins, like it's like really in it. Like that whole, I don't know, it was like a six VHS box set or something.
Wow.
And like, so like we watched the show while it was airing, but we specifically watched those six episodes over and over and over. My poor parents, or however many episodes. There were probably like two or three episodes on a tape or something like that. But regardless, those six VHS tapes were on a heavy rotation.
Yeah, no, I was all in with the seasons. And also I had like the VHS set that was just the Tommy episodes when he shows up. It was like a three-part Green Ranger thing.
Yes.
I still own on Blu-ray the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie, which is not great, but it's a thing that exists to enjoy.
That is a movie that was made.
Yeah. Congrats everyone involved on making a movie.
You have made a movie. Nobody can deny that that's what you did. Now it is time to share the lessons that we learned from Up, Up, and Away. And I'm going to continue to flip the script here and go first on this one, since I talked about whether or not I liked it first, mostly because the lesson that I learned is something that I already said with regards to this movie. And that is that, like, your superpowers are not lying dormant. They are never going to show up. And like, somehow it's going to be okay. Like, I promise you, you're going to be fine.
My lesson from this film was a quote directly from the film, and it is, no laser vision without supervision.
The lesson I learned is a continuation of Nicole's lesson, and it is that if you don't have powers, you will be fine and you can still do good things. However, it is much easier to do good things with powers.
And my lesson is, if someone hands you a CD, don't just put it in your computer. It's probably not good.
And then just hit the enter button, because that's all anyone does to a computer in this movie, is they hit the enter button and things happen.
You just break people out of jail by hitting the enter button, you know? Easy.
That's all you gotta do.
And now it is time for Sari to guess the plot.
I'm so excited.
Of next week's movie. I am also really excited. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are watching The Color of Friendship.
The superhero one was very exaggerated, so this one can't be as fictional as that. So it has to be a little bit more realistic. I think that The Color of Friendship is about a Scrooge McDuck-like character, but human. An old man who loves his money. And for him, he's always bought his friends. So the color of friendship here is green.
Oh my God.
Doesn't have a good relationship with his family, but like buys them elaborate gifts. And yeah, I don't know. People are like envious of what he has and he's really selfish about it. But then either like a long lost grandkid named Emily comes into his life and starts melting his heart and showing that friendship can be in small ways. Like she gives him a handmade drawing and he's like, what is this garbage? And she's like, I made it for you. And then he's like, I look at the art on my walls. They're so much better than your stupid drawing. And then she cries and then he feels bad. And he's like, why do I feel bad? and then like in the Grinch movies, they zoom in on his heart and it's beating and it grows a couple sizes. And then he learns gradually that the color of friendship is not just green, but in order to get the ending of this movie that is very clearly accurate.
Oh, man.
What's the tagline?
Sari, I felt your first like sentence or two, I was like, okay, she knows it's got to be more realistic.
Nailing it.
And then you took a hard left. The tagline of this movie is, look beyond black and white and you'll find the color of friendship.
Okay, so when you say that tagline, my first thought is the I'm not racist, I don't see color excuse that people give. Is it like a Hairspray kind of movie where... okay, now I'm just going to describe the plot of Hairspray. Well, there's this TV show in a segregated Baltimore neighborhood. Black or white, you see the color of friendship. This doesn't have to do with money at all.
I mean, I feel like this is one where if you want to tap out, I feel like that's okay.
Mostly, I'm just not sure if Disney is going to tackle race, how they're going to do it.
I would be genuinely shocked if you guessed how they get there.
Yes, yes.
Part of me is rooting for you. I would lose my fucking mind, Sari, if you got this correct. But like, I don't see how you could guess this.
I don't remember when this news story came out, but I feel like at some point around either the social internet or like the "you won't believe this" and then ads below the articles, there was a family of mixed race people. I think parents were, one was Irish, white, like very pale white European, and one was black, and they had twins, and so who were both mixed race, and one of them looked really white with red hair, and one of them was black, like in skin tone and hair, and like very much coded a minority, even though they were the same genetic makeup, and navigating their life as mixed race kids that looked so different. So maybe it's something like that, like a family drama where it's twins that have totally different lived experiences. And then they learn that people are racist and America is complicated. And they learn to see things from each other's perspectives and like punch a Nazi in the face. The end.
We love an ending where they punch a Nazi in the face.
Yeah. Disney in 2000 was all about punching Nazis in the face.
Yeah, you know.
Join us next time to find out if any Nazis get punched in the face. If you are enjoying this podcast, tell your friends, rate and review us, punch a Nazi in the face. Tell us your thoughts. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/DCOM, or you can find us on Twitter at DCOM Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos on Instagram because I'm currently not on Twitter.
You can find me at My Name is Maddie Nace.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is produced by the four of us, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.